Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. I'm your host, Iris Matakos. We're back. I say we're back. We're back. It's probably the first time I've ever said we're back, and it's actually meant kind of something. For those keen-eyed people, there was no episode last week. The first, and you know what? I'm going to say this right now. It's the first episode, scheduled weekly episode during the season, in which I have missed, barring international breaks, because I've taken some international breaks off, and I think barring the first club football week return after the World Cup, but I had just done 23 podcasts in 30 days that month, so I think you can cut me some slack there. The first genuine in the season Monday or Tuesday 5 p.m. episode that I've missed was last week, and I apologize, I really do. I would have loved to have got it out, but essentially, I did mention it towards the back end of last week's episode. I went to Adelaide over the weekend, so for those, it's a 7 hour drive. So if you don't live in Australia, I live in Melbourne and I went to Adelaide. It's an 8.5-9 hour drive. So just wherever you live, just associate that. For the weekend for the AFL, I left on Thursday, didn't get home until Monday at 7 p.m. By the time I got home, after spending 12 hours or whatever it was in the car on that Monday, I was tired, I was wrecked, had to wake up the next morning, go to work, then go to uni, then come home and catch up on so much stuff that I, uni-related stuff, work-related stuff that I completely ignored over the previous weekend, or over that weekend because I was MIA in Adelaide enjoying my time. And then by the time I could think again, and by the time I was relaxing in a sense again, it was Wednesday afternoon at 6 p.m. And I was like, I could record it now and get it up for Thursday morning, but like the Champions League football would have already happened, and by the time it's out, everything would have been outdated. So I went against it. I probably should have done it in hindsight. I probably should have just bit the bullet and just done it on the Tuesday night. Just got through it really tired. But on the Monday night, I didn't. But I didn't. So a little bit of a shame, unfortunately. But look, we're back and we've got a lot of things to speak about. So this will be, I won't promise anything other than just a normal episode. We're back regardless. Fresh haircut, beard trimmed. We're good. But I hope everyone is well. Anyway, since the last time we spoke, which has been a while, I hope everyone has enjoyed their last 2 weeks of football, of life in general. It's been ticking along on my end. It's been ticking along. Uni's well and truly underway. Work well and truly underway for the year. I say that we're 4 months into the year. We're a quarter of the way in the year, and I only feel that we're like fully into the year, which is pretty weird. And there's only a month and a bit left of the season, right? I mean, like 5 or so games, but the season technically ends. Well, the Premier League season ends in a month's time. So only a couple more episodes, only 5 more episodes of this season, so we'll be counting down the days till the end of that. But regardless, before we kick things off and before we touch on the run sheet for today, fit check, as always, as has now become a staple, it's a Chelsea centenary top, where's the match? Yeah, so it's a 2005, so it's 100 years of the Chelsea Football Club, obviously dating back to 1905. To the 2005 home shirt, which was the year in which we won the league. This would have been 04, 05, 06. So it would have been the 3-0 win. At the 3-0 win at home against United. Joe Cole scored, if I'm correct in saying that. This would have been the top that represented that season. But regardless, yeah, this top, I mean, the backstory behind it is, what is the backstory behind this top? Oh, this was a very gracious gift from my brother who was in London. Pretty sure that's the background to this top. I'm pretty sure it is, yeah. So this was a very gracious gift from my brother who was in London and thought, I'm a nerd when it comes to football kits, so he decided to give me this. It's got Drogba on the back, which is just terrific. It is that top. It is that top. The centenary season, mark the centenary season. Yeah, 3-0 win against United not on the final day, but on the back end, like towards the back end, the 29th of April, so the day after my birthday. There you go. Our second league title in which we won. And I really want to get it right. I really want to get it right in which, in the fact that Joe Cole scored. I really do. I do want to get that right. Hopefully, I could find this, because this is just me being a nerd when it comes to it was on the final day, but if I can quickly find the results. Here we go. Chelsea versus Manchester United. 3-0. Oh, it's not going to come up. Wow, that's a shame. That's a massive shame. It's not going to come up on Wikipedia. Shame. Regardless, I'm 99.9% sure that Joe Cole scored that game. I'm rambling. It's 6 minutes in, and we haven't spoken about football. Regardless, that's the backstory of this top. It's got Drogba on the back. It's really nice. Thanks, Tim, for buying it for me. For getting it for me. Very, very much appreciated. Let's move on, and let's actually crack on to some football chat. A lot of title race things to talk about. We've had some massive developments over the last fortnight, which is great. Champions League is well and truly kicking. Is well and truly in the latter stages now. So we'll speak on that a little bit, and a bunch of Australian football chat to speak about, which is awesome. Let's kick things off. Arsenal and Liverpool both lost this morning. What the flying fuck? I spoke about a couple of weeks ago. How I thought the title race would go. I thought Liverpool were in the box seat and were going to win it. Not comfortably, but I thought they were just going to do enough to win it. And I thought City were out of it, and I thought Arsenal were just going to be there. In a matter of 48 hours, it's flipped completely on its head. All of a sudden, City are in the box seat, 2 points clear with four or five games to go. They're 3 points clear. They're 2 points clear. Liverpool give Arsenal, I wouldn't say give them the title, but they give them one. They remove their grasp from it and invite Arsenal to put one hand on the trophy as Liverpool lost 1-0 to Crystal Palace. And Eberechi Eze goal, if I am remembering correctly. I did watch it, but it was very late at night, so you're going to have to bear with me there. It was an Eberechi Eze goal away from home. Secured the 1-0 win for Palace. And then a couple of hours later, Arsenal hosted Aston Villa, which Villa have been good this season. By all means, Villa have been really good this season, but you thought Arsenal, with a relatively full-strength team, there probably isn't one player starting that probably wouldn't start traditionally. Maybe Martinelli. Maybe Martinelli and maybe Zinchenko, depending on who you ask. But a relatively full-strength team against a Villa side that have been fine, that have been fine recently, but realistically, Arsenal should win. Neck-and-neck battle all the way to the 84th minute until the loose ball at the back post found Leon Bailey, who scored. And then 3 minutes later, a through ball found Ollie Watkins, who chipped it delightfully over David Raya to make a 2-0 game over. City in the box seat. Arsenal choke what would have been their biggest chance of putting themselves in the best position to win a trophy in a long, long time. Wow. A lot to take in there. I don't necessarily think the tie, it's not done. It is not done by any means, because there is a lot of things still to go. Arsenal still have six games to play, right? And they've got Chelsea, Tottenham, and United, all games in which, regardless of where any of those teams are on the table, when you verse another top six team, especially Chelsea and especially Tottenham, they want to do a lot to upset each other. And then, I mean, even United still have a lot to play for themselves, right? So they'll obviously be there, and that's away from home as well. And then the next games are all the games in between those are Wolves, Bournemouth, and Everton. A couple of teams who, I mean, all three teams really have quite a bit to fight for. Maybe Wolves less so, but Everton and Bournemouth, definitely just to like make sure that that relegation is secure. It basically is, but to just kind of like secure it properly. As in avoid relegation, obviously, not secure relegation. That would be counterintuitive, wouldn't it? Imagine if Bournemouth were like, guys, let's secure relegation. That would be weird. So there's that. I mean, when you look at Liverpool's fixtures, it seems a relatively similar story. Fulham probably don't have a lot to play for. They're just kind of loitering around mid-table. But then again, the threat of relegation is always going to be there, so they still probably would like to win. Everton, same thing with Tottenham and Arsenal. Regardless of where they are on the table, it's something that they need to win. West Ham, once again, definitely aren't going to go down. Probably aren't going to make Europe, so they're just going to loiter around. Tottenham, tough. Villa, tough. And then Wolves, likewise. So very similar sort of fixtures in terms of difficulty and in terms of danger games and in terms of where potential upsets could lie. There's that. And then City, who are in the box seat right now, who are 2 points clear and have the second best goal difference out of the lot. Bournemouth or Brighton even will be tough. Forest should be easy. Wolves and Fulham, two very similar games. And then Tottenham will be the hardest, followed by West Ham on the final day. City being in the box seat, having the easiest fixtures, being the team that has done it the most often in recent times, it's really hard to go past them. It's really, really difficult to go past them. And it's a shame because it was written for Arsenal, and the story behind Arsenal and or Liverpool winning the league would have been exceptional for different reasons. Obviously, the Klopp final year and all that stuff, and then Arsenal coming so close last year and doing it again, being the first team in a fucking long time to win it, apart from it being City and Liverpool. That would have been a story in itself. Whereas City, it just kind of is like, oh, the robots are back. Like, they're just doing it again. It's this machine that cannot be killed, which is kind of, it's one of those things where I think maybe in 10, 15 years, we're going to sit back and applaud it, similarly to how we applaud United's stupid run of success in the 2000s. But also, we're kind of sitting here and going, again, like, come on. It's frustrating, but I think that's the way it's going to fall. Liverpool and Arsenal lost the two games that they could not afford to lose. Those games against teams that they should beat, that's what was going to decide the league, not the games against teams of a similar kind of level to them. It was a teams in which the teams challenging for the title should beat. Those were the games that were going to cost the team the title, whoever it may be, and that's, I think, the games that have cost them the title. But then again, we could be sitting here in a couple of weeks' time and talking about how City dropped points to Forest and Wolves, and all of a sudden Liverpool in the box set again. So you don't really know. What I will say is that if, because of where the points currently sit, in terms of the title, obviously City being 2 points clear and Arsenal Liverpool being level points, I still think we'll go down to the final day. However, I also think that it might just be a formality by that stage. City have got West Ham. I can very easily see City going 2-0 up inside 10 minutes and the game being done and the festivities and everything just being kind of slowly drifted away. But then again, who knows? Because I sat here 2 weeks ago and said Liverpool were in the box set and all of a sudden they're not. And I don't know. I really don't know. It's a shame. It's a massive shame because we were gearing up for such an exciting title race. And I think it says a lot maybe about the reality of the situation. The reality of the situation in comparison to the potential narratives. The narrative around certain clubs in the league right now, probably Liverpool in particular, of them being this mentality monsters and kind of Klopp just being so persistent in their ability to just keep going and going and going and going, probably has something to do with the fact that Liverpool are potentially more flamboyant club than City, so perceptions and narratives are far more thrown in people's faces, and hence it kind of seeps into the subconscious of, if you keep getting told by hundreds of thousands of Liverpool supporters that they are mentality monsters, in your subconscious you're eventually going to believe that Liverpool are mentality monsters. And I think purely because of the I was going to use the word aggressiveness, but I think that's very harsh. The extrovertness, is that a word? Of a lot of Liverpool supporters in comparison to the City supporters, who are on a whole far more reserved. And maybe that's because there's less of them. Maybe because they're a little bit more aware of where the success has come from. So they don't really have a leg to stand on, regardless of the reason. Because Liverpool fans are so much more out there, especially on social media, especially in kind of the new media sphere. In comparison to the City supporters, that mentality monsters thing has just been thrown for the last 5 years, and eventually it's stuck in a lot of people's heads. So they just assume that Liverpool are just going to go on with it. When in reality, it takes a lot more than just being mentality monsters. Like, maybe they underestimated Palace. Maybe Palace are their bogey team, obviously. We all know times that Palace have upset the apple cart late in the season for Liverpool in the past, right? Just ask Luis Suarez. So, yeah, maybe it's that. But I think this is probably a year where we can finally see the difference in the perception, or the difference in the reality of the narrative in regards to the perception of the narrative, because City are that team that all the positive things that have been said about both Arsenal and Liverpool, City are that team. If that makes sense. So for all the mentality monster things that have been said about Liverpool, for all the Arsenal play really good football and the fact that they can carve teams open and whatever, all that has been said about Arsenal, that actually applies to City. And maybe it's because they were the most kind of, not underwhelming, under the radar team of the season. They just kind of went about their business because everyone expected them to. Whereas there was a lot more hype around Arsenal because they backed it up, and there was a lot more hype around Liverpool probably after Klopp's announcement that he was leaving, that's been pushed into the headlines. So regardless of the reason, I think it's one of those things, right? Where I struggle to see, like, City are still within a chance of doing the treble. And if City do back-to-back trebles, you can sit here and poke fun at every single thing. They bought their way, whatever, whatever, whatever. But we've seen teams buy a lot, and we've seen teams spend. We've seen teams spend ridiculous amounts of money and achieve the square root of fuck all. And we can't just use the "they spent money" as a criticism for City, when in reality, the coaching, the tactics, the culture around that club needs to be praised more than the criticism of them spending stupid amounts of money needs to be. Now, if they are found guilty of all their charges and et cetera, then it's a completely different story. But as things stand right now, they're innocent to proven guilty, so whatever. But I just think that's kind of funny little thing that kind of not broadens conversation, but at least should be factored into the conversation of what the real story behind whoever wins the title, what that story is, if that makes sense. I think one more result, like right now, Liverpool and Arsenal have put themselves in a position right now where they have to be absolutely flawless for the rest of the season. And I think it kind of goes back to Liverpool's dropping off points against United. That put the dagger, this has put the knife in the back, and they've got one shot of removing those two daggers, and they've got one shot. And that is by being flawless and not losing. And if that means sacrificing the Europa League, then they do that. And I genuinely think that that is something they should consider. And because I'll tell you why. Normally, I'm a trophies over league position guy, except for it being first, every day of the week. However, Liverpool aren't a club that are starved of trophies. Liverpool aren't a club that need a trophy. Liverpool value the Premier League so much more than they value a trophy that they should put all their emphasis into winning the Premier League, if it means sacrificing all chances of winning the Europa League and the FA Cup, if that makes sense. Whereas someone like Aston Villa, who I saw a clip recently where their fans were asked whether they want to win the Conference League or whether they want to finish top four. If you're an Aston Villa supporter and you want to finish in the top four ahead of the Conference League, or ahead of winning the Conference League, you have rocks in your brain and need to get that checked out. Just a thought. So yeah, there's that. So that's why my opinion technically contradicts itself, but I think the logic behind it, in a sense, is far more like makes far more sense. But yeah, there you go. I think that's it for title race chat. Once again, if I had to stop everything, put a gun to my head, predictions, I feel like I should do this for every single kind of week now until the end of the title race. End of the title race, because it could finish like 2 weeks, so it doesn't matter. Cedar in the box seat. I think. Yeah, City Dot. I'd be flabbergasted if they don't do it. I'd be shocked, absolutely shocked. But there you go. Moving on, let's not move to Europe. Let's speak about European football, Champions League, and in specific away goals. Obviously there was two. Obviously the Champions League quarterfinals have kicked off midweek, and this conversation around the away goals really was poignant after the Wednesday morning fixtures for Australian time. Arsenal drew to Bayern Munich 2-2, and Real Madrid drew to Man City 3-3. Two cracking games, 6 goals and 4 goals apiece. 10 goals between the two games. It was a brilliant morning of football for those who watched it. Unbelievable. Goals galore, entertaining football, 4 of the best sides in the world going at it. Unbelievable stuff. However, the criticism around that is that, okay, because of the results, those games are now basically null and void because it's essentially nil all. And if away goals are still a thing, Man City come back home and think, we've got 3 fucking goals. How good. Bayern Munich go back to the Allianz with two away goals. Unbelievable. Arsenal and Real Madrid are sitting there going, we shouldn't have conceded that many goals at home. We have to attack now. Completely different narrative shift, completely different mentality shift, leading to a far more interesting, entertaining, and potentially goal-filled game. I made a comment very, 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 very early on in the history of this podcast, in one of the first episodes, around away goals, and I said that the fact that they got rid of them was stupid. Now, I then went back on that statement. I am now going back on my statement, if that makes sense. The fact that away goals existed was one of the very, very key distinctions between the Champions League, Europa League, Conference League knockout style of football. That was a key distinction. So, Jesus, if I could speak, that'd be great. The away goal rule in European football and in football in general was one of the key distinctions between those type of games, between those type of games and other style of knockout games in football, but also other style of knockout games in sport, whether it's NBA playoffs, whatever type of playoff in whatever sport. The fact that away goals meant so much, and the fact that they were literally a tactic for teams going away from home, it encourages scores, it encourages more competitive games. The fact that we had it, we got rid of it, and now we want it back, it just says a lot about the people in charge being so out of tune with what the fans actually want. And I don't see a positive. Because we've had two brilliant games between Arsenal, Bayern Munich, and Real Madrid, Man City, and now completely null and void because it's a draw. Essentially, it's nil all. Like, it could be 3-all, 1-all, 10-all, 15-all, nil all. It doesn't matter. It's a draw going into the next game. Whereas if it was 3-all, 3-all, Man City host Real Madrid and go, we've got 3 away goals. How good's this? All of a sudden, Real Madrid go, fuck, we conceded 3 goals at home. We need to attack now. We need to score some goals to level that. Just in case it's a draw. One of those things where I think people that are running football are completely out of touch with the game. And I mean, the Champions League format will change next year anyway, so it doesn't really matter because football's dying as we know it. So, yeah, it's just one of those things. It's just one of those things, which I thought was a very valid talking point coming out of that, those two games. So yeah, there you go. I dislike that a lot, but apart from that, really good game. Some of the goals in the City versus Madrid game were fucking insane. Guardiola's goal was unbelievable. Saka, let's talk about Saka very, very, very briefly. Bukayo Saka. Let's have a chat. Just score, bro. Just score the goal, bro. Is it that hard? Like I get it. A penalty, you want it, right? I get it. Especially because you take them, right? I get it. But just score the goal. just it was an open net, bro. Just score the goal. Like, you're one-on-one with Manuel Neuer, one of the best goalkeepers ever, if not the best goalkeeper ever. Take a touch, you take a past him, you're thinking, hold on, I've got an open goal here. And then, for whatever reason, you decide, I'm going to try and earn a penalty when I can just kick the ball straight and it'd be a goal and I've won a Champions League quarterfinal leg against Bayern Munich at home. Imagine the scenes. Imagine the scenes. That would have been insane. But no. For whatever reason, he says, I'm just going to stick my leg out and try and earn a penalty. And I'm very, very glad that the referee didn't buy it, because it's not a penalty. Just score the goal. We should reward scoring goals over earning penalties. I think that's a pretty fair want. I think that's a pretty fair want. So that's kind of, yeah, that's that. Just score the goal, bro. Just score the goal. Barcelona 1-3-2. PSG getting knocked out. That'd be so funny. That would be hilarious, even though their team is actually pretty good. And then Atletico versus Dortmund, Atletico 1-2-1. They should get it done. Axel Witsel played centre back for Atletico Madrid. Jesus Christ. I did not know that. He was a beast. FIFA like 14, 15 when he was playing for Dortmund. He played for Dortmund around about that time. Or was he at Zenit that time? Where are we? Korea. Yeah, no, okay, so this was what, okay, he was at Zenit. But when he was at Dortmund in like FIFA 18, FIFA 19, FIFA 20. Yeah, based. Yeah, like 70 pace. He was like a DM. He was tall. He was great. Now he's slow and he's a centre back and can't run. That's what slow means. There we go. Yes, okay, great. I think that is all for European football chat. Jesus Christ, I ramble. That's all for European football chat. I'm going to move on now and start to speak about some Australian football because there's a lot to speak on. Okay, let's come back to Australia and speak on a couple of things. Nestori Iranconda, the big story over the last kind of fortnight when it comes to Australian football, and I think we're going to be speaking about, I want to say, I'll try and keep this brief because I feel like we could do a whole podcast on him and the story and everything that's happened with him ever since he burst onto the scene, from people doubting him to his petulance, to his red cards, to his fucking absurd footballing ability, to the revelations that have happened over the weekend. Now, I'm not going to sit here and bore everyone with the context. Everyone should know that watching that cares about Australian football should probably know the context around him basically being blocked from being called up for the Oli Roos or whatever happened. I didn't really look too much into it because as soon as I saw Iranconda and not how good is this guy, I just kind of stopped reading and caring because he's a 17-year-old at this stage, 16-year-old. I think he's still 17. He's a 17-year-old and he's one of the best footballing talents that we've seen, right? That we've seen. He's 18, right? He's 18. Turned 18. There you go. He's born in 2006. He's 2 years old. He's 2 years younger than me, technically, or will be in 12 days. I'm not going to sit here and speak about the wider context surrounding the Oli Roos stuff or whatever, the Asian Cup stuff or whatever, because I don't care, right? I truly don't care because it's politicking around an 18-year-old, which is a completely different issue regarding him. It doesn't involve him because it's not just him. It's Valpardo, it's Sicardi, it's Robertson, it's everyone that has had issues with being called up or not being called up. And that is a grand minor issue. It's a Football Australia issue that we could probably have a good conversation about at a different date, regardless. The conversation I want to have around Iranconda is the fact that, maybe I'm going to be a little bit hypocritical here, and I think I am, the fact that he's as talented as what he is, right, which is just freak. Like, if anyone is doubting his pure footballing ability after the goal he scored on the weekend, like, he has scored some bangers. Like, he has scored some stupidly good goals. Free kicks, outside the box, whatever. That goal that he scored against MacArthur on the weekend is probably one of the best he's ever scored. That goal, to hit it with that power, that accuracy, so far into that corner from where he was, is just stupid. Like, it is stupid. And that is probably one of the the fact that that goal isn't being spoken about as, oh my God, this is his best goal ever, how good is his kid? The fact that he's got goals that are probably better than that, or at least more flashy than that, shows he's just how good he is, right? So we need to start speaking about him being an elite talent more often. I'm not going to say elite footballer because he's not that yet, but he has the talent to become elite footballer. He's gone to Bayern Munich, right? He's gone to Bayern Munich, and the reason I'm having this conversation now is because this was his final home game, or his final game in front of his home fans, assuming Adelaide I don't even think they can even make finals and be in a position where they can host a final. I don't think. They've got 10 points to make up in 3 games, so they can't. This is final. Actually, no, because it's a two-legged thing. Regardless, I'd be shocked if Adelaide played finals. So this was his final game in front of his home crowd, hence why the conversation's happening now. He's gone to Bayern Munich, and a lot of people are questioning that move, looking at Garan Kuol, for example, and looking at people like Daniel Arzani and Marco Tilio, who have had failed careers in Europe after making the move at such a young age. Now, this is different, I'll tell you why. Because Nesyri Okundo is better than all three of those players, right? And I'm a Malvich supporter who has fallen so drastically in love with Daniel Arzani over the season. Like, I love that guy so much. If he had a left foot, he'd be the best footballer in the world. But that's besides the point. Nesyri Okundo is better, right? And was better at their respective ages. He has everything there to be a good footballer. All he needs is structure. And all he needs is good coaching, good system, good guidance. And that is something that this country cannot provide. Cannot provide. This country cannot provide the good enough guidance, structure, leadership, education, whatever, to make good talents into elite footballers. Bayern Munich are one of, if not the best club institutions at doing that, right? And even if they're not, they're pretty good at it. Pretty good at it, right? He obviously won't be playing first-team football. He's not going to be lining up in the Champions League next season. He's not going to be playing alongside fucking Sané and Mane and all these players next season, right? Mane, is he still there? I don't know. Regardless, he's not. He's in Saudi, is he? Fuck, I don't know. I'm getting sidetracked. Regardless, he's not going to be doing that. He will be there as a project player, will probably be sent out on loan, probably playing in the third Bundesliga where their reserves team are. But it's the fact that he goes to Bayern Munich and can learn and can educate and can be this and can develop into a footballer. And the thing is, people are all of a sudden going, if this move fails, he's a bust. If this move fails, he will float around Europe, come back to Australia, no one will care about him. He's going to Bayern Munich. It's not like he's going to bloody Leighton Orient, right? I love the O's, by the way. It's not like he's going to Leighton Orient, where if he fails at Leighton Orient, he's going to be playing non-league football in England, and then he's going to be floating around in obscurity. If he fails at Bayern Munich, he'll probably go to like a championship club or like a League One club or that relevant kind of tier in football. And then if he smashes it there, he can be playing lower tier Prem football or the equivalent of that around Europe. And that is a very good career. Like, that is a very good career. Do we all of a sudden expect Nesyri Okundo to be the best footballer in the world? No. And if you do expect that, then you've got rocks in your brain. You do. Because despite his talent, we've seen so many players with talent, like I said, Daniel Arzani, Marco Tilio, Garan Kuol, are perfect examples of when talent doesn't necessarily mean instant impact and all of a sudden they're world beaters as soon as they go to Europe. They might fail. You can call Garan Kuol's move to Newcastle so far a failure. He's still playing at an elite level in Europe. You can call Daniel Arzani's move to Celtic a failure, or Tilio's move to Celtic a failure, or whatever, right? But they're still playing at relatively high levels. Like, Daniel Arzani probably, if the World Cup was happening this offseason, Daniel Arzani's probably going. He's probably going. And if you play at a World Cup, I'm sorry, you're not a shit footballer. You're not a shit footballer. That's just how it works, right? So the talk and the overestimation of the player that Nesyri Okundo immediately has to be really frustrates the shit out of me because all everything because of that, all the talk around him immediately amplifies. When he doesn't get picked for the Oli Roos, it amplifies. When he doesn't get picked for World Cups or Asian Cups, it amplifies. When he doesn't get picked for an Adelaide United game, it amplifies. When he doesn't score a penalty, it amplifies. When he does score bangers, it amplifies. We need to realise what we're dealing with here, and I think Football Australia has a lot to answer for in this, because he's their commodity, right? And I don't mean that in a kind of objectifying way, right? I mean that in a way of Nestor Iraconda can make Football Australia and can make Australian football a stupid amount of money, right? A stupid amount of money. From everything. From getting people to play because they love him. From t-shirt sales to merchant, like everything. So why aren't Football Australia doing everything in their power to protect him, to make sure he's got all the support he needs, everything, like the PR around him is excellent, like putting so much time and money and investment into him? And if they are, then fuck, we've got some inept people running football in this country, which we probably already do, but I think it amplifies this more. And if from what it seems, it's clear to see, in my opinion, that they're not doing that, which is the frustrating thing. He has 3 games left in Australia, barring, obviously, assuming Adelaide don't make finals, which I don't think they will. He's got 3 games left. I think one's versus Western United. I think it's Western United, Central Coast, and someone else, I think. Western United, Central Coast, and Brisbane. So if you live anywhere near any of those 3 places, go down and watch him, because it's going to be the last time you see him play club football in this country, I can guarantee. And he's one of the best talents that we've ever produced. In terms of talents, I'm not talking players, I mean pure talent, he is. And just look at his goal. Just look at his goal record, or like look at the great goals that he scored. And if you can't sit here and tell me that that boy is not talented, then I don't know what to tell you. You're a lost cause. I think to summarise, Nestor Iraconda has been failed by Football Australia, has been failed by a lot of people that are very powerful in Australian football. And he, like I said, he's one of the best talents this country's ever produced. And he deserves and has deserved a lot better than the treatment that he's got from everyone, from his coaches, from the kind of governance of the game, people at Adelaide United, people at Football Australia, people that are in charge of him. I think he's been treated well in some instances, he's been treated poorly in other instances, but I think on a whole, we're going to realise in a couple of years what we had and how much we could have nurtured him a little bit better and gotten more out of his talents. And regardless of the fact of it being an Oli Roos issue, an under-23 Asian Cup issue, a Graham Arnold issue when it comes to him not being capped, I think that is purely a microcosm of the bigger issue, and that is Football Australia is governed by people who do not understand how to handle situations that can drastically benefit football in this country. Because Nestor Iraconda can make Football Australia and then subsequently Australian football a stupid amount of money, and we've mishandled him in the 2 years that he's been very prominent in this country. He's got 3 games left, he'll leave, go to Germany, and I can guarantee you in 5 years' time, when he's banging them in for a top 10 in Europe, we're going to sit back and go, this was great and all, but when he was here, we traded him like shit for whatever reason. And it's a shame, because like I said, purely talent-wise, arguably the best we've ever produced. And he's only 18. And he's only going to get better. So that's just, I think, 2 cents on that. I don't know. I can't be bothered. There's that. Other things I want to speak about. The Sydney Derby happened and ended in hilarious fashion. Sydney United. They didn't play. God, they did not play. I could tell you that for free. Sydney FC beat Western Sydney 2-1 in the last minute through a Kakarski goal, volley at the back post. which was a complete defensive breakdown on the behalf of Western Sydney. But if you speak to Mark Redan, it's young 18-year-old Marcus Yunus, who didn't start the game, who came on, and it was his fault that Sydney FC lost the game. He's 18 years old. He was born in 2005 and has played 11 times in his career at professional level. It's your fault, Marcus, that you cost Western Sydney the game. It obviously isn't. Obviously, Mark Redan is a psycho. Absolute psycho. For those you didn't see, basically the goal that Sydney FC scored to be the winner was like a cross to the back post. Kakarski was free, volley goal. Similar to I think Luke Shaw goal in the Euros in the final, that type of goal. And then Mark Redan came out in press conference and basically singled out Marcus Yunus and goes, it was his fault. He didn't mark the player tight enough. He was the reason why we lost. 18 years of age. Just mismanagement of the highest proportion. Like, it's absurd. Like, that is absurd. Mismanagement of the highest proportion. That is one of the most batshit insane things I've heard in a press conference ever. I get if it's a slightly more senior player who's a little bit more experienced, who's a leader, and you need to make an example out of them to fix up the rest of your playing group. I kind of understand that. But to single out an 18-year-old kid who's played not even a dozen times in his professional career, I think that says a lot about the accountability that Mark Redan holds within himself in comparison to Marcus Yunus's defensive ability. That's what I think. So it's not his fault in the slightest. Just, I don't know, maybe coach better to not put yourself in that position in the first place, Marco. You dick. I'm not a big fan of him, as you can probably tell. Like, he's probably a fine person. He's not. We kind of know he's not. But he's a... Can't manage a football team. I'll tell you that. Can't manage a football team. And that leaves Western Sydney teetering on the borderlines of finals. Sniffing up their arse is Melbourne City, who are the weirdest football team to ever grace his glorious country. Melbourne City won 8-0. This isn't the sum of results that Melbourne City have had this season. They've won 8-0. They've won 7-0. They've lost 5-1. They've won 8-1. They've drawn 3-all. Twice. They've lost 6-0. Just the weirdest football team to ever play the game. Like, just absurdly strange in every aspect. And this was a team that I thought was going to win. Maybe not win the league, but thought was going to go deep. This year, based off what they did last year, and they just haven't. So, pretty bizarre, but that's besides the point. Central Coast to top, they beat Western United over the weekend. Melbourne Victory lost to Wellington in hilarious fashion once again. We've got two home games left. And I can't even go to the game this weekend. Fuck, that's a shame. That's a big shame, actually, I've been to like every home game this season. Like nearly every home game. But can't go this weekend, unfortunately, which is a shame. Regardless, hopefully Victory can not bottle top three. We're not going to finish top two. We actually can't finish top two. So let's just finish third, please, shall we? Let's just finish third. That'd be great. But yeah, that is all for today's episode, I think. Preview of the week, just Champions League football, I think. Barca will win and knock out PSG. I think Atletico will win and knock out Dortmund. Bayern will win. City will win. There you go. Atalanta will win. Marseille will win and go through. Roma will win and go through. Leverkusen will win and go through. Speaking of Leverkusen, they won the league undefeated. They're not invincible, though. They have to finish the year undefeated for them to be invincible. That's the caveat. And there's no Prem. Oh, no, there is Prem. Just no early game. Shame. We versus City at 2:15. God, goodness, that's going to end well, I'm sure, in the FA Cup. We could win that. We actually could win that. And then, yeah, we'll be back again next week. Thank you all very much for watching another episode of the Two Foot Attacker podcast. I've been your host, Arsene Tarkos. Thank you very much for sticking around. If you have, if this is your first episode, make sure you stick around for the future ones. If this is your last, if this is your 100th episode, please don't be the last one. Please, I promise. Thank you for sticking around. As always, make sure you follow and do all the links that are in the description. I forgot to shout them out in the start of this podcast. Shout them out. All the relevant links to myself and the podcast are in the description of YouTube, all the audio platforms, all the socials. You can basically get the hint. I'll be here next week. I promise I will definitely be here next week. That what happened last week will not happen again. But there you go. Thank you. Stay well, stay safe. See you guys next week. Love you all. Goodbye.